Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of August 26th, 2016. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator and all-around good guy, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing good. How are you doing?
Very well, very well. So, D.R., for people who have listened to the show and followed sort of the chain of events, something happened this week that can only be described as the other shoe dropping as a consequence of a week ago, the Supreme Judicial Court said that the pipeline companies that are trying to build pipelines in Massachusetts could not tax the electric ratepayers in order to pay for the construction of their pipeline. Right? Mm-hmm. They said they couldn't do that. It was against the law. So there's the first shoe dropped. Tell me, D.R., what was the second shoe that dropped this week?
Well, as WBUR reported, the utilities Eversource and National Grid, which had been which had teamed up with Spectra Energy to construct the so-called Access Northeast pipeline, decided to wash their hands of their involvement with the construction of the pipeline. This comes, as you noted, right after the SJC said that these utility companies couldn't gouge the ratepayers to pay for the construction of the pipeline. And even though Spectra Energy is still putting up this front and saying that we're still going to go forward and, you know, to use the old Monty Python quote, it's just a flesh wound. There's a lot of speculation, including speculation by, among others, the Conservation Law Foundation, which filed the lawsuit that led to this ruling. That this pipeline project is all but dead because they basically, you know, cannot recoup whatever expenditures they'll be able to invest in it. So it's basically
the protesters are two for nothing right now, right?
Yes,
the Northeast Direct, which was the pipeline that was going to go across the northern part of the state, has been canceled, and now it's surely, as you say, the Black Knight of Monty Python fame is on the ground with no legs and no arms, saying that he's still got fighting him, right?
Exactly. And it just goes to show you, again, as we noted previously, the importance of the courts and how you have to pay attention on both the state and federal level to who's picking the judges and what those judges do.
So we are, even though we're sort of making fun of Spectra, you really don't know what they're going to do long term. Right? Who knows what nefarious scheme they might come up with next. Mm-hmm. But it does raise questions. So for those listening, it's my understanding, although you can't really tell from the sort of news reports or what Spectra says, I think that the big compressor plants in Acushnet are now basically off the table, and all the stuff from Weymouth, I guess, they're going to put a compressor plant, and there was a long chain of towns. Those are all off the hook. But near as I can tell, the West Roxbury Lateral Project is still underway, right? There are still people there, and they're fighting to stop that pipeline as well, right?
Yes, and that's why it's going to take a continued people's veto to basically force Spectra to sort of reconsider what they're doing, that people do not want this in West Roxbury. They don't want natural gas pipelines near, you know, quarries where they use dynamite. It won't be a dynamite situation. It'll be a deadly one.
Well, I guess this is now a moment, right, where for the people that have come into the movement over pipelines, right? And most of them, legitimately enough, come in because the pipeline is in proximity to something they value highly, right? Mm-hmm. Now, that as the threat of that pipeline tends to alleviate, the question is, you know, do you go back to watching The Voice and TV at night, or do you stay involved? And I guess I would say that there places like West Roxbury still need support. Right? You can't, once you're awake, it's hard to go back to sleep. I mean, you realize that the issue is bigger than your town, that these pipelines are essentially a global threat for the various reasons. And even for me personally, it's turned out that I you know, it's hard to keep up with all of the stuff. But out in the Dakotas, there is a huge face-off going on between the Sioux Indian tribe and a bunch of jokers that want to put in a pipeline called the Dakota Access. I don't know why access is such a great word among pipeline people, but the Dakota Access Pipeline is supposed to be as long as Keystone XL, and it is being opposed primarily by, I guess it's the Sioux Indians, because it crosses tribal lands. Have you seen anything, Dan?
Yes, it's a fascinating and somewhat complicated legal and political controversy involving, as you know, the Dakota Access Pipeline. The Standing Rock Sioux tribe has filed a federal lawsuit to try to block the construction of this nearly $4 billion pipeline, which is going to straddle the North Dakota-South Dakota border. A federal judge has said that he will make a decision on whether or not to allow or to halt construction before September the 9th. By September the 9th, they'll decide whether or not to issue a preliminary injunction halting construction on the pipeline until the legal matters are resolved. The Standing Rock Sioux tribe is suing the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, saying that when the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers granted the permits to Energy Transfer Partners to build the Dakota Access Pipeline, they essentially ignored several federal laws, including the National Historic Preservation Act. They've also pointed out that if this pipeline is built and it starts leaking, it will ruin their water, it will ruin their land, it will ruin our climate, and that therefore this was a bad decision by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. It has generated a lot of protests.
And so they're trying to reverse that decision, right?
Yes.
In other words, so they're hoping for a September 9th decision to be able to have an injunction where they can then argue the full case.
Exactly.
I mean, I guess it's – go ahead.
And the protests actually began in April, but they ramped up in early August because that's when – the construction started to begin in earnest, and a lot of people put their bodies on the line, as you saw in the case with the Keystone XL protests and in others, and similar to the West Roxbury protests, to basically, you know, issue a people's veto and say that you do not have a right to do this. And a number of the members of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe have noted that this was another situation where a private company used eminent domain to they claim to get the rights to this land, and how does a private company have the rights to eminent domain?
I mean, for me, the pictures that you've seen are basically of the Sioux Indian, basically a group on horseback face to face with these roads. I guess they've kind of almost militarized, you know, the police forces militarized the whole area, and so there's this face off between guys with guns and Indians on horses, and it's just too evocative of something that is a horrible part of American history from my perspective. And you know, you look at it and say, well, we can't again destroy the livelihood of these people. I mean, it's, and on top of that, it's a global warming issue, and it connects right back to the West Roxbury Pipeline and the late departed Algonquin Access Northeast, right? These are all part and parcel of the same thing. And if you're concerned about one, it's a good idea to be concerned about the rest of them, right?
Exactly. And I have to mention along these lines a fascinating debate that you can find online between John Iderola and Cenk Uygur of the Young Turks discussing this issue of the historical implications of this protest, of this effort to try to, again, you know, destroy Native American land. And the debate, and another aspect of the debate in which Cenk Uygur argued that in the near term, it's not feasible to try to block the construction of any and all new fossil fuel infrastructure. And John Iderola argued that, in fact, facing the climate risk, you have to do this in addition to pushing for new clean energy. Cenk Uygur was arguing that the thing to do instead of trying to block all fossil fuel infrastructure is to push for more clean energy. And John Iderola was arguing that you have to do both.
That's the same thing they said about Keystone XL 4 years ago, right? You know, make a deal, it'll be better if you let it go, but work for clean energy. And I agree with you. Yeah. No, you got to stop it all. Oppose it everywhere all the time. So I think that there are various sort of there are opportunities – I'll see if I can find the Facebook page, but there's crowdfunding opportunities for people to give money to the to support the effort. I guess there's like 90 tribes or 90 teepees or mm-hmm. there's an encampment there, and it's all yes. coming to a head, and I think it's an important important thing to know about, especially mm-hmm. as we seem to have some success here, which you can't walk away now. But yep. I guess the other side of the coin. So there's one lesson that I take from this thing of the utilities walking away from the pipeline here in Massachusetts. That lesson is that as a climate activist, you shouldn't walk away from the issue. The flip mm-hmm. side is how much imperiled the fossil fuel industry is. Right, they're mm-hmm. coming under increasing attack from so many directions. And what I've seen is that, for example, there's a report, I think, again, from Climate Progress, and it was situated in Chile somehow, but the competition between solar panels and a coal plant, the solar panels was hugely less expensive, right? Mm-hmm. Basically, the argument being that solar is cheaper than coal. When you get yep. there, that's a pretty good place to be, right?
Yes, and that goes in connection with an Inside Climate News report about how even members of the coal industry are saying to themselves, hey, wait a minute, we need to seriously address the issue of climate change. Uh-huh. We can't keep burning all this coal. You know, we have to, as the saying goes, keep it in the ground. So when even the coal industry realizes that it's in a coal load of trouble, you can pretty much figure out that that's the end of that industry, and it's a long overdue end. I mean, I'm reminded of Bill Maher's line that there needed to be a war on coal because coal is bad.
Yes, well, I guess the other sort of two tidbits of information, right? Of course, everything, all these things are random, but they show up and all of a sudden you begin to see a pattern. So solar is cheaper than coal. The coal companies and the whole fossil fuel industries is on the ropes, right? Mm-hmm. But the flip side is that this guy named Elon Musk, who is, you know, well known for the SpaceX, and he's a big figure. He is the owner of the Tesla car company. I guess mm-hmm. they have announced a 300-mile battery option now for the newer cars, which will, in a couple of years, will have a 300-mile battery. I mean, that yep. is really good.
Mm-hmm.
And it directly challenges the fossil fuel, the gasoline industry.
Exactly. It's a testament to Mr. Musk's drive to sort of move us away from fossil fuels.
So you got that, and then the other kind of straw in the wind, shall I say, is that down in Block Island, they are just completing the America's first offshore wind turbine setup, right? Mm-hmm. It should be providing power by, I think it said October, but it's all pretty much built?
Yes, by November, according to Think Progress, it should start, it should be able to put electricity on the grid. And as we in Massachusetts look at it with a bit of envy to see what's going on in Block Island, and we think of all the blockheads who stopped us from building the Cape Wind project with all these sort of nonsensical lawsuits. Although I do have to say, with regard to lawsuits and with regard to the lawsuit that the Native American tribe has launched against the Dakota Access Project, you know, I've said this before, and it bears repeating, that turnabout is fair play. And if dirty energy interests want to file incessant lawsuits to stop things like Cape Wind, there's nothing wrong for climate hawks to do the same thing in reverse, to turn it around, to give them a taste of their own medicine, and tie up these sort of fossil fuel dirty energy projects indefinitely with lawsuits. I mean, sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander.
So I agree with you, but I wanted just for a moment to go back to the Block Island wind turbine and paint a picture for people who may not be that familiar. Of course, Block Island is a small, beautiful, it's almost a vacation spot. Mm-hmm. It's probably 20 miles off the coast of Rhode Island, which of mm-hmm. course is beautiful as well. If you look on a map, you'll see it's a little tiny dot. And off to the south of that, I believe the installation is south of that, you know, a few miles far enough offshore, mm-hmm. there will be something like 5 wind turbines, right? It's a relatively yep. small number compared to the Cape Wind project that was proposed for Massachusetts, but still in mm-hmm. all, it's in the water. And yep. it has the significance of it is that you've now put steel in the water, I guess, as they say. But there's now a whole industry that can grow up around doing that. I mean, all of the south coast of Massachusetts is Connecticut. You know, if you look at a map of, if you've never looked at a map of Rhode Island, you should just take a look, because there's more shoreline than there's land. Right? There's so many bays, and then you go further to the east. I mean, New Bedford Harbor is a deep water harbor with a whole wind turbine facility that's intended to help support these the construction of these offshore wind turbines. I mean, the Block Island thing, in combination with the recently passed omnibus bill that calls for, I think it was 1.8 gigawatts of offshore wind. I mean, there's a real opportunity here, and we finally have some steel in the water, which is all a good thing.
Although we should note, the New York Times, in their coverage of the Block Island thing, they note, quote, that deep water wind and the supporters of offshore wind in Rhode Island, quote, had a lot of help from the political leadership of Rhode Island, which has seized the lead in this nascent industry ahead of bigger states like New York and Massachusetts, unquote. In other words, the leadership in Rhode Island wasn't distracted or intimidated or you know, impressed by the idiotic arguments of the what's that group, Alliance to Protect Nantucket Sound, or you know, and the sort of the Bill Koch types who did everything they could to try to kill off Cape Wind. You know, Rhode Island had some sense, had some leadership, and we need some of that right around here.
Well, we in Massachusetts, we look to the south and admire them, as you say, with envy. They got the first one in the water, but I expect we will be coming along. I certainly hope we'll be coming along soon. Well, DR, there you go. I think what we'll do is tell our listeners that they will be able to find links to most of what we talked about on the blog. And that blog is at massclimateaction.org /blog. Okay, that's the place you can go. When you're there, you can read, you can see the links. Of course, you can donate to MCAN when you're there. Please do that. You can find the show on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can listen to the show there, or you can please share the show with your friends so that they can become familiar with us. You can listen to the show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio. And, of course, you can always find us on iTunes, which is by now sort of classic podcasting stuff, right? That goes back 15 years or so. But you can find us on iTunes. You just search for Massachusetts Climate Action. So, DR, we will close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. So thank you very much for being here, DR.
And we should insist on some more offshore wind, too.
We should insist on more offshore wind. Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.